This is Phil Ferrand, and I am walking around. It's a gorgeous day today. The sun was out earlier where it's a little cloudy right now, but still a gorgeous day. I was getting a little concerned yesterday because we hit like the mid-80s yesterday. And I was finishing up on the Easter costume. Still have a few little things to do, but we're close. I was thinking, whoa, if it's 85 on Friday, that's not going to be good, but I checked the temperature and it's not. On Friday morning when I go to Walmart, it's going to be 36. So, welcome to the Ozarks. Oh, man. Anyway, so all is well with the Easter costume. It'll be fun. It'll be fun. I'll post on Facebook some videos probably on Saturday of all that stuff. And happy Easter, everyone. Hey, the sun just peeked out. That's good. You may hear a little roar in the back. That's actually our neighbor is having his whole huge white fence power washed. It's gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous when that gets washed up. So it's beautiful. So all is well. Let's see, writing. This last week was the first big official week. I'm doing fine, all things considered. It's been an interesting week. So I've had the costume, of course, I've been working on, so that's chewed up a little extra time, but I had decided since officially Book 13 didn't start until April 1st. I had the 31st, the 30th and the 31st. I set that aside to work on the costume, made good progress there, got some things done that needed to be done. And then I started work. Wait, am I on the right week? Just a second. Wait. Got to figure out which of this I'm actually supposed to be talking about. Wait, there's my calendar. Okay. So this is the 7th. Yes? No. August? Hang on a minute. Where are we? Let's see. Today is August the 9th. Right. So this would be the first full week when I was on Book 13, when I was really supposed to do the thing. So I got my 3,000 words in on Sunday. We were good to go there. And then was it Monday or was it Tuesday? I think it was Monday. Oh, yeah. Is that right? Monday? Yeah, okay. So Monday, I'm downstairs working, going along. I had gotten my 3,000 words in. Now I'm working for my major client. Everything's fine. We're going good. I hear my wife shouting upstairs. So I quick shut some things down. I was actually talking to one of my coworkers. And I said, okay, I have to go now. So he said, okay. So I shut everything down and ran upstairs. And the young lady who lives with us, her dog had bit my wife 3 times. They had gotten crossways. And some of them were pretty deep puncture wounds. So I got her to urgent care. I wasn't even allowed, interestingly enough, wasn't even allowed to go into urgent care. There were 0 visitors. Only the person that was getting treated could go in. So, you know, so I sat out in the car, but it was a gorgeous day. So I sat out in the car and I just actually did some writing while I was there. So that worked out okay. I didn't get a ton done, though, because, you know, by the time we picked up medicine, I took care of her, made sure she was bed down, you know, weights, all that kind of stuff. Of course, that chewed up some time. And then Monday night, we closed the cash receipts portion of March, which this end of month was always going to be a little bit odd because it was the first time that we were actually going to try to close remotely since we're all scattered to our houses. We thought we had everything in place for it, but, you know, you never know. And that's when things got exciting because Monday night discovered that there was a rule that I had put in 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I had put in this rule because we had had some discussions, and how we know that it's end of month is if somebody puts a little Y in a field on a certain record, because this was all based on mainframe stuff, that is the end of month flag on what's called the common date card. So we were a little concerned that that might get set wrong, so we put in a rule. And the rule was that if it's not December, and you're past the fifth of the month, it must not be end of month. In retrospect, maybe that wasn't such a great idea. But, you know, we weren't thinking about things like pandemics. So we went to run our nightly cycle, and it woke up, and it said, hey, it's the 6th, and the 6th is past the 5th, so I am not running end of month. So what that meant internally, externally it was fine because they ran the end of month schedule, but what it meant internally is that there were some key pieces that hadn't been run. I noticed there was a problem about 8:30 at night. We got the schedule stopped. We went through manually, did some quick research, figured out everything that it had skipped, went through manually, did all those things manually, got everything set up for the mission systems to pick it up in the morning, and got to bed, I don't know, 1 o'clock by the time it was all said and done. And then, of course, was up the next day, working, and looked like everything was going to be fine. The missions, main missions guy took a look at everything, and he thought it looked fine on the cash receipts. So then on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, missions looks like it got all closed, and all the statements have gone out. So far, so good. Everybody seems to be happy. But that made the week a little exciting between, you know, my wife's getting bitten by the dog 3 times and doing the extra work for the end of month stuff and trying to get the last final touches on the costume done and regular work schedule and also trying to keep the writing going. It's been a full week. At this point, I think I'm 500 words down, which is not bad. And the book is going well. Book 13, I think, is going well. This is just kind of a monster of the week book where we're pushing now to the end of the second set of 8 books. And so now I know where we land on the end, and I just got to get us to that point. So I'm on book 13. We're heading towards book 16. And I already know what the big was supposed to be in book 16, so I just got to get us there. And I've been laying groundwork for it, you know, for the last 4 books, and I'll lay it in this book as well, which will be the 5th book in the second set of 8. So it's fun. It's fun. But through it all, Jesus has been kind. He's helped us all to stay calm. And now we're just trying to get my beloved healed up and get all the things taken care of that need to be taken care of there. She seems to be doing pretty good. Pretty good. There's a little, you know, we're going through those stages of healing, and so some of them look worse than others. And we're kind of in one that looks a little worse, but she has a doctor's appointment tomorrow morning. And of course, they're doing that all virtual. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. So it's good. It's good. All is well.
down here by my little stream. So maybe I'll just stop here and we'll chat for a little bit. Okay, we're at just over 10 minutes. I did come across a topic for today. And maybe I'll keep walking. And it's an interesting topic. And unfortunately, I don't seem to grasp all the math involved. Unfortunately. So, because the guy in the article, and I may revisit this when I get more math and do another podcast. The guy in the article is talking about why quantum entanglement is causing a problem for physicists understanding the nature of reality. I'm taking some notes out. And he has an interesting quote from Stephen Hawking at the beginning of this. The name of the article is Why Physicists Still Don't Know What Reality Is. And this is by Jed Brody, who has written a book. And Stephen Hawking, the quote that he has of Stephen Hawking is, I don't demand that a theory correspond to reality because I don't know what it is. Reality is not a quality you can test with litmus paper. All I'm concerned with is that the theory should predict the results of measurements. And there's a couple of things. One of the interesting things to that, about that to me, is that that sounds perfectly reasonable to me. Perfectly reasonable. That science does not try to define the nature of reality. It is trying to simply define things that are useful. It's trying to define things that allow you to make a prediction, to measure stuff, and then to see if your prediction has those measurements. And from that, then you determine whether something is useful and you can use it and go forward. What's interesting, though, is that even though that is what science is, I personally find that scientists really have a need to take those measurements and then try to define reality by them. And even Stephen Hawking did this, as I recall, and it's been a while since I read his books. But in his books, he seemed very eager to show that, in fact, the universe could function in such a way that there was no need of a designer. Now the question is, by these measurements that he is interested in having, by these measurements alone, can we deduce whether there is a designer or not? And to me, the obvious answer to that question is, no, you can't. Because he says, flat out, I'm not trying to define the nature of reality. I don't know what reality is. But there is still a need down below to do more than just take measurements. There is a need to make stipulations about the nature of reality. And in the process of making those stipulations, there is a need to confirm one's needs about what reality should be. And what can happen a lot with individuals, especially intelligent individuals, who want to be in control of their own worlds, and want to do what they want to do and not answer to anyone else, there is often a reaction in individuals
to try to figure out. I'm sitting down at my little favorite spot here by the stream where the water is flowing. There is often a determination, and right at the moment, not only is the stream flowing, across the other side on the bridge, I've got a view of all the cows at a nearby, I think it's just a beef ranch. And all the cows are out eating their stuff, and above them, looks like a hawk is circling. It's a gorgeous day. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous day. So there is a need to define the nature of reality in a certain way, and that is that there's nothing above me. That, in fact, all this just happened by itself, because I don't want to answer. Actually, there's two hawks. Yeah, gorgeous. There's a need to define that. And so even though there are the pronouncements that, well, I don't know what reality is, and I just take measurements, then beyond that, there's, well, and these measurements show that there's no need of a designer, when that is not what those measurements say. Those measurements might say that, but they might also say that the designer just designed this thing really well so that it could function without him, but just because it can function without him, it doesn't mean it is functioning without him. You know, there are plenty of fallacy points in that whole set of reasoning. So circling back then, apparently, and like I said, I wish I had the math more under control here, because as I'm looking at all of this, I'm like, yeah, but get, but. The idea behind this article, and like I said, I might review and come back and do more of it, but there is something I wanted to get to, which is a thought I had this week that's interesting. The idea behind this is that scientists are trying to figure out the basic fabric. So he has an example in this article about his old dog. And he said, I'm watching my old dog sleep in his chair. The tip of his tail curls under his snout. I look away and look back. Nothing has changed. I have every reason to believe that my observation of him has no effect on him whatsoever. What do sleeping dogs do when we look away? Exactly what they do when we look back. But what do microscopic particles do when we're not watching them? And that's a question altogether different. And so he goes on to talk about detectors and two different scientists that are trying to check on things, and how that the average of what they should do, according to the mathematics, should come out to one number. And yet in all the observable science, it comes out to a number greater than that, and it really shouldn't. And what is being derived from that is the potential interconnectivity of particles. That there's more reactions going on behind the scenes than we can measure. Or perhaps our measurements are actually affecting things that shouldn't be affected. And when you get into this idea of quantum entanglement, where you have things that are entangled no matter how far they may be separated, and that entanglement means there are unexpected side effects to your measurements, and perhaps your measurements are making changes to other things, then nature, per se, becomes this whole other thing. And it becomes something that is very difficult to predict. And yet, in our classical physical world that we exist in, everything does seem to be predictable. And all of this kind of leads up to one of the things that I talked about in Still Whispers, and that is that you really can't understand the nature of the world until you understand what Paul meant, I think, when he said in Colossians 1 that everything that was made by Christ, and nothing that was made without him, and by him all things cohere. All things consist. All things hold together.
And I'm convinced that what Paul was saying was that Christ, in fact, holds everything together that we experience by the power of his will. That it is his good pleasure that we will experience what is here. And we talked, I think, last week about the future and the past and how we should react to those things. I had a chance to practice that this week. Because when my wife's hand got bitten 3 times, that was a chance to practice that, to not immediately run to the worst consequences, but to say, you know what, we're going to take this one step at a time, we'll see where this goes. I had a chance to practice that this week when I realized that our setting didn't get set for the end of month close, which meant we were going to have to do a bunch of stuff manually. And there was plenty of things that could have been missed. But apparently, at this point, it doesn't look like we missed anything. Yay. Okay, but when we're in the middle of it, it's quite easy for you to let your mind just run and say, oh, you're going to miss something. This is going to be terrible. So I had the chance to practice what we talked about last week, this week. It was a fun and exciting week. I'm just waving to cars as they go by because I'm sitting here on the bridge. But this week also, in reading this article and thinking about this, you know, I know that some people, when they approach things that seem like mysteries, they wonder, why in the world are these things this way? Why isn't it just straightforward? You know, if God is such a good designer, why does it appear? I'm going to start walking back. Why does it appear that there's chaos? Why does it appear that things are indeterminate? You know, does this really mean that there's a multiverse out there and that everything is just floating along by chance, and the only reason that we're here is that we happen to be the one universe in a gajillion infinite universes that just happens to have formed with the right possible combination, and we just happened to be on a planet that just happened to form with exactly the right configuration, and the moon just happens to be, you know, 1/400th the distance to the sun, and it just happens to be 1/400th the diameter of the sun, you know. So we get total eclipses, and you could just go through all of our lives with all of the seeming serendipitous things in our lives and the tuning, and you can look at all those things and then you think, well, everything's great. And initially all the scientists say, well, sure, everything's classical, you know, everything's built on these very pristine and beautiful rules. And then you get into quantum mechanics and everything's weird. And some people say, well, see, that proves, you know, there's just chaos. That it's just multiverses, that everything's by chance and we just happen to be. But I would submit that those conclusions really are not based on anything besides the set of presuppositions that the scientists have who are investigating things. One of the things that I find fascinating about physics is if you look at the major theories of physics and then you examine the religious persuasion of the people who invent them, you find correlations between their religious persuasions and the theory that they invent. Newton was very classical. Believed in God, believed in a, you know, watchmaker, believed in all that kind of stuff. Einstein was a deist, I think, so he still believed in certain kind of fixed rules, but he had some flexibility. As I recall, I may not be correct, Niels Bohr was Buddhist. So, you know, there's much more chaos, per se, and you're trying to control the chaos, and of course he then invents the early fields of quantum mechanics. It's very interesting to me to see how the base philosophical assumptions about reality tend to get interpreted into people's work. Even though it steps outside the domain of science. And the way some people approach this is they approach this as an excuse to then degrade the reputation of God, or as an excuse to determine that he's not there. But I would come at that a bit differently. Because while the heavens do speak to his glory, and while people can conclude the right things about God simply by looking at the heavens, I don't think God necessarily built the heavens and the earth to exactly prove his existence. I think maybe, as a parent and as our father, he would build things to teach us about his nature and to give us examples about his nature without necessarily proving that. And our whole environment is an environment that way down at the quantum level is utterly chaotic, at least from our perspective. We will never understand it. But something makes it make sense. And Paul says that Jesus makes it make sense. And that's an interesting analogy that we can work out in our lives. Our lives, as we move forward, are often chaotic. We have no idea what our decisions, much of the time, are going to result in. We can think we know, but we don't really know. I mean, just an example from this week, it was interesting because the little dog has actually bitten my wife before, a couple of years ago. But things have seemingly been going okay. And so he was upstairs, she was with him, she was trying to get him to go outside. And she said, "Do you have to go outside?" And he kind of raised up, and he's an older dog now, and he doesn't hear very well. And so she was just thinking, you know, "So do you want to go outside?" And so he kind of raised up, so she reached out for his collar. And she said, "I remember thinking, whoa, you better not do that. That might be a repeat of 2 years ago." But she reached out and touched his collar anyways, because she could not imagine that that simple act would set him off, because he hadn't gotten set off like that in a while. But for some reason, it set him off. And so instantly, you know, there's chaos. So we don't always know where our decisions are leading. And there is that chaos in our lives. But Christ can be the force that draws us together and that unifies us, brings order to the chaos, helps us moving forward. And my beloved actually said later, she said, "You know," she said, I heard that little thought," and she said, "I reached out anyways." You know, so what's the explanation there? Did God fail? Did God not do well by her? The fact that she's having to endure all this healing right now? You know, is that the fault of God? And I'm not saying it's the fault of my beloved, because stuff happens. We all just make mistakes. But what's interesting to me, and I know I can look back in my own life and see this over and over and over again, how that when I was at a decision point, that there was a nudge, and maybe I ignored it, and there was chaos that went out from that. So there's this chaos constantly around us, and then there is this voice of coherence inside us. And maybe that just reflects what the nature of all the reality is. That Christ becomes the coherence that is drawing our very existence together. Let me give you another quick example of something I thought of this week. It's interesting that people will completely ignore the marvelous complexity of the human body and how well it does what it does. How amazingly well that it does all this stuff. And they find two or three things to nitpick. And then they say, well, it's obviously not designed because X would never happen. And one of the X would never happens that I have heard in the past is the idea of the optic nerve. Because the optic nerve in our eyes crosses over a portion of the retina. That creates a blind spot. And people look at the fact that the optic nerve travels in that direction and they say, oh, obviously, this was just an evolutionary mistake. My neighbor is mowing his yard. He's enjoying the beautiful day too. They say, oh, that must just be a mistake. Or the other way that you could look at this is that it wasn't a mistake, it was an analogy. That God did it that way so that when we would discover that, we would say, oh, that's a blind spot. And then that understanding would flush out into our lives as an aid for us to say, you know what? I bet there might be blind spots in my life. Maybe I should pay more attention. And when that thought came to me this week, I thought, oh, well, that's pretty interesting. That maybe we should be more aware that God's plans in our lives, God's purposes in creation, are not so much to enable us to understand the exact nature of things, and by that knowledge to be puffed up in how great we are as humans. But perhaps God has created and crafted our existence in such a way that He has given us analogies, that He has given us things that can help us to understand, I'm getting my mail, more about the nature, the true nature of our existence, and to help guide us into more successful behavior. I'm rolling back home. I'm almost made it. This is Phil Farron. I'm walking up my drive, and it is soon to be Easter. Happy Easter, everyone. Have a great weekend.